You know, you cannot be too Jewish.
Thank you. I couldn't possibly agree more.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Charles Jacobson, activist against anti-Semitism and co-editor of Betrayal, The Failure of American Jewish Leadership. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Two Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Two Jewish is paid for by Two Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. I'm excited to be off this weekend, headed for Portugal, a country I have never visited. Now, I have at last count traveled to over 50 different countries over the years, a small number compared to my good friend Tom Price, whom you hear weekly on Two Jewish talking about Jews around the world. But still, I guess, I've been a lot of places. But until now, I've never been to Portugal. I'm headed there because a close friend is getting married on the island of Madeira in the Atlantic Ocean off the coast, and since I have to fly to Lisbon in order to get to Madeira, well, it's a good excuse to explore an interesting new country. However, Portugal is not a new country for my family, or at least not for some of my long-ago ancestors. You see, one branch of my dad's side of the family lived in Portugal and potentially Spain before that. Their family name was Del Banco. In the year 1496, under pressure from the King and Queen of Spain, who'd expelled all Spanish Jews in 1492, King Manuel I of Portugal expelled all Jews. The new law of 1496 required Jews either to convert to Christianity or leave the country, and so my ancestors, the Del Bancos, emigrated from Lisbon, going first to the Italian peninsula. They later moved from there to the Rhineland area of Germany, where they married into a German Jewish family of the name Reinhardt. Both the Reinhardts and the Del Bancos eventually immigrated to America back in the 1840s, the Reinhardts settling first in Portland, Oregon, and later mostly moving to Cincinnati, Ohio, while the Del Bancos went first, well, right away, actually, to Ohio. Three of the Del Bancos, my distant cousins, served in the Union Army during the Civil War. Two of them went missing, another one died. And then, of course, our family spread out over the United States, as so many American families do. All of that personal history means that when I explore Portugal this coming week or so, I'll be kind of coming back to a country in which some of my ancestors lived over 500 years ago. Admittedly, I'm probably only about 1/64th Sephardic Jew. The Portuguese Jew were Sephardim, of course, but that small part of me originated in Portugal. So while it's not exactly a homecoming, it will be interesting to see just how it feels to wander around Lisbon and Porto this coming week. You know, I once did one of those commercial genetic DNA tests that are supposed to tell you your biological origins, where your ancestors came from, that is, in great detail. The kind of test that tells you you are 43% Irish, 12% Scottish, 28% from Ghana, 4% Neanderthal, and so on. I was hoping for some detailed conclusions about exactly where my people came from. But when my DNA test came back, it gave only the conclusion that I am 100% European Jewish. Great. As if I didn't already know that much about my heritage. Still, it will be interesting to see just where some of my antecedents lived over five centuries ago, before again becoming wandering Jews. I promise to fill you all in on just what Jewish experiences can be had in Portugal this summer of 2023. In the spirit of this coming trip, to play us in this morning, here's a Sephardic classic, Hija Mia Mi Querida, as performed by Musica Sephardi. The lyrics recall that time of exodus from the Iberian Peninsula, which was, of course, by sea. My daughter, my dear, don't throw yourself into the sea, for the sea is stormy. It is going to carry you away. That was Emilia Villalba and Sefardica performing the Sephardic classic song Hija Mia Mi Querida. Our guest on Too Jewish this morning is the controversial anti-Semitism activist, author, and leader Charles Jacobson. His new book is called Betrayal, The Failure of the American Jewish Leadership, and he joins us for a provocative visit in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Charles Jacobs is a longtime activist on behalf of Jewish causes and other humanitarian causes. He and Avi Goldwasser have edited and compiled a new book with the slightly provocative title, Betrayal, The Failure of American Jewish Leadership. He has been highly active both early in his career in anti-slavery groups and founder of Americans for Peace and Tolerance, which has worked on behalf of pro-Israel and Jewish causes. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning, Rabbi. Thank you for having me.
So you would not be the first person to say that American Jewish leadership is not wildly successful at the moment, but you guys come at this from a very interesting perspective. Tell us about the origins of the book.
So I spent the last 35 years of my life combating what you might call the external enemies of the Jews. First with the media, the media bias against Israel, and then the professoriate, the radical professoriate that is hectoring and intimidating Jewish students across the land on college campuses. My partner and I made a film, Columbia Unbecoming, some 20 years ago, which we thought would wake up and warn the Jewish leadership as to what was coming down the pike, and it didn't. We fought the left, we fought the right, we fought Farrakhan, and the radical leftists inside the Democratic Party now. And we've come to a conclusion about 2 years ago that unless Jewish leadership itself changes, all of these wonderful groups who joined us to do this work, and I have to say my life is blessed by having known the best Jewish activists of our time, you know, from Camera, from Mort Klein of ZOA, from Stand With Us, and Emmet, there's too many to SSI, Itamar Marcus, Steve Emerson, Dan Pipes. I mean, all of us knew that there was a new anti-Semitism, that that anti-Semitism is a virus that morphs, and in our time, after the Holocaust, it just wasn't kosher to say Jews killed Jesus and Jews run the world like that, and Judaism is poison. So they shifted, and it's now Israel who is the Jew among nations, and we knew that, and we knew that unless Jewish leadership took this on, we'd be where we are now, which is, in brief, our house is on fire. I don't know many Jewish institutions who don't have security concerns, if not armed guards. This is not the country we grew up in. So Avi and I decided to, anything that we could do as grassroots activists may not work. The Jewish community might not survive the tsunami of anti-Semitism that's coming at us. Comes from four ideological sources: the right, of course, the left, the Muslim, radical Muslims, and elements in the Black community, unless Jewish leadership changes. And so we knew a lot of people agreed with us, but people are reticent in the Jewish community to go public criticizing our leadership because, after all, we are a besieged minority, and we don't like to wash our dirty laundry
in public.
But we did. So we collected these wonderful writers, and they all, I think there are 22 essays, some from prominent people like Alan Dershowitz, Jonathan Tobin, Fain Rosenbaum, some from unsung Jewish activists who are fighting their local JCRCs and ADLs who are failing us. So that's the book, and the book is getting great reviews on Amazon, and people should read it.
So, and I should note, a lot of the people you've mentioned are like Thane Rosenbaum, past guests of Too Jewish. We will talk much more with Charles Jacobs and explore some of those aspects of this rising, I hate to say a tide, but definitely a rising influence of anti-Semitism in America, where it comes from. The book is called Betrayal, The Failure of American Jewish Leadership. We'll be back with Charles Jacobs in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in Northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this summer. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A progressive congregation in Northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675 for more information about Beit Simcha. Religious school registration for the 5784 year is open for school-aged children or grandchildren. Join us in our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah program, Torah Tykes experience, confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up now. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events include Friday night and Saturday morning services. Friday night is at 6:30 p.m., Saturday mornings at 10 a.m., preceded by Torah study at 9 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. You can also watch on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson, for services. Our musical services are there virtually, and, well, they're up for a long time. All of our Adult Education Academy classes, including Torah study, are live and on Zoom. You can access those by going to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org. And our wonderful religious school is available live and on Zoom. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school, and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, and wonderful array of Adult Education Academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to www.BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, and the fastest-growing Jewish congregation in all of Southern Arizona, Beit Simcha. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or a criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com, or go to our website, twojewishradio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website, or download us from the Apple iTunes Store, his very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine. Over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and now on Spotify, too. Post a rating, review Too Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments are valuable. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, for listeners used to thinking about or looking at the Middle East through Israel's eyes, the idea that Iran, which has been this pariah for Israel, is now chatting with Saudi Arabia, which had been kind of creeping closer to Israel and an axis with Egypt, seems strange. Like, what's going on? But there's a much bigger kind of picture of the Muslim world, and maybe you can help paint that for us.
Yeah, it's very complicated. And as both the Israelis and the Americans are pushing for a rapprochement between Saudi Arabia and Israel, and Washington seems very eager to add Saudi Arabia to the list of countries which has decent working relations with Israel. First of all, the Saudis just made it clear that until the Palestinian problem is resolved,
no normalization, right, like the UAE did or Bahrain.
Right. I mean, the other thing that's ironic is, yes, Israel shuns and fears Iran to a large extent, but Iran is home to the largest Jewish community in the entire region.
Yeah, still.
Yeah. So things can't be that bad, or the Jews would have found a way out, as they did from all the neighboring countries to Iran. But basically, to help your listeners understand maybe a little bit more of what's going on behind the scenes. Since the founding of Islam in the 7th century, there's been first a two-way rivalry and eventually a three-way rivalry for leadership of the Muslim world. And the initial rivalry was between Arabic speakers and Persian speakers. So not necessarily the countries of Saudi Arabia and Iran, which didn't exist in their modern forms until the 20th century, but the populations represented by those two language groups. Then when the Turks emerged as a first regional and then international power, which began to happen in the 12th century and grew increasingly important until like the 15th or 16th century, the Turks kind of took over the leadership role. The Arabs receded into the background. They lived in mostly poor, non-industrialized countries. They didn't play much of a role on the international stage. Iran did for a while, but I shouldn't say Iran, I should say Iranian speakers or Persian speakers.
Right, Persian speakers.
For a while. But Farsi. The Turks established this giant empire that eventually included all the Arab countries of today, which were provinces of the Ottoman Empire. And the Turks appropriated the caliphate at some point in the Middle Ages, and they kept it until the early 1920s, yeah, when it was finally
20th century
dissolved and cut apart from the Sultanate, which no longer existed once Turkey became a modern democratic republic under Ataturk. So there is still this background of deep-seated rivalry and suspicion and competition for the hearts and minds of the world's Muslim populations. And it's like this is an ongoing undercurrent that's probably more important than anything else that we focus on so obsessively in the region.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. It's a deep, ancient, and complex kind of, as you said, I mean, a rivalry between three really quite different cultures for the leadership of, how many Muslims are there in the world? A billion or something? I mean, some enormous
number. A very large number, yes.
A whole lot. Tom, thanks so much. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Today, a classic. Sadie tells Maury, her husband, you're a schmuck. You always were a schmuck. You'll always be a schmuck. You act, you dress, you look like a schmuck. You'll be a schmuck until the day you die. And if they ran a worldwide competition for schmucks, you would be the world's second biggest schmuck. Why only second place? Maury asks. Because you're a schmuck, Sadie screams. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish. Just for you, you should live and be well. I love that joke. And now a word of Torah. This week we have an unusual pairing of portions called Chukat Balak. In general, we have more Torah portions than weeks of the year, so sometimes we double up. This particular Jewish year is short in the area of Shabbatot, when we can read Torah portions, and therefore we are gifted with some doubled Torah portions. And this week's doubled portion, Chukat Balak, occurs only in the diaspora, that is, Jewish communities outside of Israel, and only occasionally. So what is unusual about combining these two sections? Usually when the Torah portions are combined on Shabbat, they are on a similar theme or subject, and it sort of makes sense to do so. But Chukat Balak, this rarest of all doubled Torah portions, deals with two quite different subjects. One has to do with purification, an odd ritual associated with the red heifer. The other has to do with how others see us, a famous talking donkey, not the one from Shrek, and a glimpse into how differently we can look from afar. What's the connection between Chukat and Balak? Well, perhaps it's this. Both portions revolve around a four-legged creature that is essential to the text, one in the form of ritual, one of narrative. Secondly, both Torah portions highlight the uniqueness of our particular people of Israel, given a special responsibility to seek to achieve lives of ethical goodness and holiness.
In Chukat, we are given specific commands that allow us to cleanse ourselves from sin. In Balak, we see that no matter how we view ourselves, others see us as a powerful force in the world. As a unique people, Israel, we have God's command to seek to make the world a better, holier, more ethical place. A great set of responsibilities, indeed. Not a bad message this week, or any week. When we return in a moment, our guest this morning, Charles Jacobson, will tell us just what the leadership of the Jewish community of America is doing wrong, and how perhaps we might begin to fix that. Find out his analysis and his suggested solutions when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Unsurprisingly, the gunman who committed the worst anti-Semitic attack in U.S. history was held guilty of all charges he faced, according to the verdict delivered by a federal jury last week. The right-wing terrorist who murdered 11 worshipers at a Pittsburgh synagogue October 27, 2018, was charged with 63 counts in total. Those included 22 capital charges, two for each of his victims. 11 charges of the federal crime of obstruction of the free exercise of religious beliefs resulting in death, and 11 charges of the federal crime of willfully causing bodily injury because of actual or perceived religion resulting in death, which is a hate crime. The sentencing phase of the trial is set to begin next week, during which the jury of 7 women and 5 men will consider whether to give the defendant the death penalty. Defense lawyers told the court they were prepared to argue a mental health defense and would bring witnesses to the stand. This verdict is a milestone in one of the most significant court proceedings in American Jewish history. It provides a determination of legal accountability for a horrible tragedy that has reshaped American Jews' sense of security, not just in Pittsburgh, but throughout the nation, in the nearly 5 years since the attack occurred. The victims of the terrorist murdering were Joyce Feinberg, Richard Gottfried, Rose Malinger, Jerry Rabinowitz, Cecil Rosenthal, David Rosenthal, Bernice Simon, Sylvan Simon, Daniel Stein, Melvin Wax, and Irving Younger. They prayed at three conservative and Reconstructionist congregations housed in the building at the time, Tree of Life, Dor Chadash, and New Light. May their memories bring only blessings. In Israel, Tel Aviv University finally recognized it couldn't keep honoring the Sacklers. For years, as a Sackler name came off of art museums, colleges, even a wing of Shakespeare's Globe Theater in London, amid revelations about the family's contributions to the opioid crisis, the Sacklers remained very much attached to the medical school at Tel Aviv University. 3 weeks after the Jewish family that produced the opioid OxyContin agreed to spend up to $6 billion on addiction treatment and prevention in exchange for immunity from civil claims, the university has announced the family kindly agreed to remove their name from the medical school. For the last 50 years, the Faculty of Medicine at Tel Aviv University has proudly borne the Sackler family name, the school said. In a continuing desire and commitment to assist the university and faculty to raise funds for medical research, the Sackler family has kindly agreed to remove their name from the Faculty of Medicine. With this move, they will enable the university to offer naming opportunities for the Faculty of Medicine and School of Medicine to new donors. We can only hope that those donors have not contributed materially to the opioid crisis and so many deaths. I added that. Tel Aviv University gratefully acknowledges the multi-decade contributions of the Sackler family to the development of the Faculty of Medicine into an Israeli and world leader in the health field. The announcement from Tel Aviv University's medical school removes one of the biggest remaining public honors for the family, which became the subject of a pressure campaign after allegations emerged that Purdue Pharma, the company the Sackler patriarchs turned into a pharmaceutical giant, had engaged in a range of deceptive advertising practices, obscuring the addictive potential of its products, in particular OxyContin. Those practices, the family's many critics say, made opioids into the leading cause of drug overdose deaths. Tel Aviv University resisted pressure to drop the Sackler name from its medical school, although an American-facing wing of the school quietly removed it from its marketing materials last year. Tel Aviv University still had a Sackler Faculty of Medicine whose about page cited the generous contributions of renowned U.S. doctors and philanthropists Raymond and the late Mortimer and Arthur Sackler. In other news from Israel, Palestinian terrorists killed four people and wounded four more in a terror attack at a gas station near the West Bank settlement of Eilat last week. An Israeli civilian returning fire at the scene of the attack killed one of the terrorists who had emerged from a vehicle, and another was later captured. One of the wounded Israelis remains in serious condition. Hamas claimed the gunmen as members and said the attack was a response to an Israeli military raid on the West Bank city of Jenin earlier in the week. In heavy fighting surrounding that raid, Israeli forces killed five Palestinians, including three terrorists, and wounded more than 90 people. Palestinian terrorists wounded eight Israeli soldiers. In the incident at Eilat in the West Bank, the terrorists shot at a guard post at the entry of the settlement first, and then continued on to the gas station, which has a snack bar. Residents of Eilat were temporarily told not to leave their homes. The dead terrorist murderer was a resident of a village, Urif, close to Huwara, the Palestinian town where Palestinian terrorists killed two Israeli brothers driving through back in February. Settlers retaliated, raiding the village and burning cars and buildings in a riot that was condemned by the Israeli government, including the IDF and Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. This time, after the murderous attack, settlers entered Turmus Aya, a village close to the Palestinian city of Ramallah, burning and damaging dozens of cars and homes. Again, that riot was condemned by the IDF, other Israeli officials, and Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. There were celebrations of the murders of the Israelis in major West Bank cities and the Gaza Strip, initiated by Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. The United States, Israel, and the European Union all consider those to be terror groups. The shooting comes as tensions intensify in the West Bank and Jerusalem. More than 20 Israelis and more than 100 Palestinians have been killed since the beginning of 2023. Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant convened a briefing with top security officials within hours of the attack. Things are not settling down in the West Bank these days or East Jerusalem. Tragic deaths continue to pile up. In addition, in the Golan Heights area of Israel, the Druze, an extremely loyal minority population with their own religion who also celebrate Muslim holidays, rioted against the construction of a wind turbine farm near a village there. They don't want the turbines right next to one of their villages, and this controversial electricity generating project was delayed by Israelis. They don't want the turbines right next to one of their villages, and this controversial electricity generating project was delayed by the rioting at least until after the Eid al-Adha holiday. It may now be further delayed or perhaps even canceled by Israeli authorities. Jewish Israeli groups have joined with the Druze, protesting this construction in a very scenic region. It is also opposed by the Chevre Haganat HaTeva, the Israeli version of the National Park Service. It is most unusual to experience any Druze protests against any regime they live under in the Middle East. They are extremely loyal, by belief system and practice, to whichever country they live in. The Druze have been loyal IDF soldiers and even Knesset members in Israel, while those who live across the border are similarly loyal and effective soldiers in Syrian and Lebanese armies. By the way, we actually had a Druze member of Knesset on Too Jewish some years ago. Negotiations between Israeli authorities and Druze leaders are ongoing, and we hope and pray that this situation at least will be resolved favorably soon. And that's the Too Jewish News of Jews around the world. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation
known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Charles Jacobs. He is a prominent anti-Semitism activist. I think that's a complicated but factual way to state it, who has co-founder of Americans for Peace and Tolerance. He worked at part of the leadership of an American anti-slavery group. I know that's a long time ago, but still important work. The new book that he has co-edited, and by the way, he has a PhD from a small school in Massachusetts, Harv something or other. Anyway, the book he has edited and compiled with Avi Goldwasser is called Betrayal, the Failure of American Jewish Leadership. So I just want to note that it's not like anti-Semitism is a new thing in America. And I will tell you that when I worked as a cantor in Los Angeles in the 1980s, getting into the synagogue was unbelievably complicated. You get through layers of security and security guards and locks and cameras. So, but it's different now. How is it different from the way it was, 40 years ago?
Okay, so 40 years ago, anti-Semitism, you could find it in the cheap remarks of people who had imbibed it in their mother's milk. And it came from old-fashioned anti-Semitism, the kind that we knew growing up, the Christ-killing stuff, the claim that Jews were cheap and greedy and manipulative, all that stuff, and that Judaism, is poisoning society. And the shift, and after the Holocaust, that stuff just was not politically correct. You couldn't, it was not socially acceptable to do those things. And we encountered it in kind of carom shots, nothing too direct, although there were some of those. But what's happened is that the left has picked up anti-Semitism. And since the left has gained, I would say, pretty much sole control of major American institutions, this is now normalized. And that's why you get, like you got a couple of weeks ago, a commencement speech at CUNY Law School, where they had an Arab woman tell us that Jews in Israel are murdering babies, Palestinian babies. And she got an applause from the dean. So that's new. And it's new that it's the Israel angle that they're getting us through, not the killing of Christ angle. And then, of course, added to this is the sad data that the Jews in New York who are getting beaten up on the streets and spat upon and pummeled are being targeted mostly by minorities and mostly by Blacks. That's new. And then, of course, if you Google memory, memri.org, you can see imam in mosques across America preaching horrible things against Jews and Judaism. So you have the perfect storm of, yes, the right, I mean, you know, the Jews, this is a Jewish conversation, right? We're going to all debate, like, who's going to kill us more? So in the right, it's like a heart attack, right? They come in with guns and synagogues and they kill you. But from the left, with their control of the media and now the energetic part of the Democratic Party and the campuses and all of that, it's a cancer. And so you have the result that half of Jewish students on campus hide their identities. This is much more, I think, dangerous. We can all debate this. This is more dangerous because it's normalizing Jew hatred, this special form of Jew hatred in American culture. That's really dangerous.
So not to play devil's advocate, because I don't advocate for any of this, but there had not been a murderous attack on a synagogue in American history until 2018, the Tree of Life massacre, and then 6 months later, the attack in Poway. These were by radicalized right-wing extremist terrorists. This danger is not just coming from the left.
No. I agree 100% with you. It's coming from the right as well. And as I said, they're murderous. And but everybody knows how to fight them, and there's no internal debate
conflict
in Jewish communities,
right,
that we ought to fight them. We there's no debate about that. Yes, the debate is about the other stuff. And I would make the claim that if the other stuff hadn't been there, I don't know that the right wingers would come out. If Jews hadn't been already tainted as supporters of an apartheid racist state, how are you going to taint Jews after the Holocaust? So I would make the case that you wouldn't have Roger Waters, right, with his Nazi uniform, had there not been anti-Israelism as the new anti-Semitism. But there's no doubt, you're absolutely correct. I mean, I said in the beginning, we have to have guns in our synagogues, right? We have to have guards. We have to, yes, and we have to use everything in our power to push back against the right. Absolutely.
There are a number of the authors in this collection that make a very powerful point that American Jewish leadership is now, how can I put this delicately, so privileged that they're unwilling to offend their institutional status by taking on some of the anti-Semitism that's cloaked as anti-Israelism. Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, yes. First of all, they're anointed. They're not elected. These people who are the heads of ADL and the heads of the federations around the country and the JCRCs and AJCs, they're anointed by wealthy donors who are not as vulnerable as the rest of us, because they have...
Insulated by their own wealth, if you will.
Yeah, by their own class. Right, by their own wealth and their own class. And I would make the point that they all went in with the Jewish leaders that they had anointed on the policy of, we are going to unite with all the other victims of hate, the blacks, the feminists, the gays, the Latinos, and the Muslims, and we're going to fight Islamophobia, quote unquote, because if we're nice to them, they'll be nice to us. There'll be reciprocation. Well, the fact of the matter is that the game board flipped, and now all of those groups are lined up against us if we're supporters of Israel, and even if we're not. And the reason that that happened, and the reason that Jewish leadership is flummoxed and bewildered and like a deer in the headlights, is that they don't understand the massive transformation of ideology in the left that occurred when classic liberalism... We are all classic liberals. Everybody who's listening to this thinks that people should have equal opportunity, no matter their race, gender, sex, religion, creed, whatever, right? Well, that's changed. Now the demand is for equal results. And the new woke ideology divides the country into oppressed and oppressors. And the only reason that some groups succeed is because they oppress the ones who haven't. And guess who turns out to be the most successful people, meaning the most oppressive people? It's us. And Jews are defined as quote unquote, adjacent white people. So we got kicked off of the victim group that were our supposed allies. And now we're with the white oppressor group. And the most anti-Semitism is coming from the groups that we supported with our resources, our love, our passion, our commitments, our principles. They flip on us. And the Jewish leadership doesn't get it, doesn't want to get it, doesn't want to look at it, has no new strategy to deal with it. Deer in the headlights.
So what solutions do you propose?
Well, in the book, first of all, we fought with all of our allies and the good people. And we said, we've got to tell the Jewish people that our leaders are failing us, leading us down a dark alley with a thug at the end with a baseball bat, because that's what happened. And most of them don't want to do it because it's a cost to them. They will be deplatformed. If you have a really successful pro-Israel group and you start to criticize Jewish leaders, you're not going to be able to speak in your synagogue. You're not going to be able to speak anywhere. So we understood that. But we said we have a moral obligation to explain to America's Jews the actual situation in which we find ourselves, which is that there's a train going to hit a wall, and the people we thought were going to protect us are not there. So that's that. We have a list of 10 suggested items. The first is, everybody has to know what's happening. So please, buy the book, right? And then we should declare, the Federation and the ADL and the AJC should declare a state of emergency. This is really a serious thing. More and more Jews are going to be beaten up and hurt, and more Jews are going to be intimidated on college campuses. And now with the new woke ideology, which has been adopted by the Biden administration, fewer and fewer Jews are being accepted. I mean, this is data at the Ivy League, and fewer and fewer are on boards in philanthropies because we're not the good guys anymore. So declare a state of emergency, number one. Explain to the Jews the flip, the woke progressive ideology that is destroying classic liberalism, that protected us and that we loved and should love and should defend, okay? They're not doing it. Three, develop a strategy to deal with what I would call the inconvenient sources of anti-Semitism. What are you going to do about black people who beat up Jews? Why don't we go to the pastors that we know and explain to them black anti-Semitism? Have them explain to us black anti-Semitism. You know, have a pro. They're not doing any of that I can see. What are you going to do about the Muslim preacher? What are you going to do about the leftist anti-Israel media, right? There are great groups. Camera, I was the co-founder of Boston Camera, is doing great on this. But why shouldn't the head of the ADL be the one who also says the media is cheating and lying about the Jews again? So there's Holocaust education, which everybody thought was, you know, the shield. Well, it doesn't work because the way it's taught, it teaches how Jews died, not how they lived. So there's no source of pride in most of it. I'm sure there are different versions, but in most of it. And also, it doesn't end with the story of Israel. It's like my friend Itamar Marcus says, it's like telling Sleeping Beauty without showing the kiss of the prince. I mean, we survived. And we have a beautiful state, but you can't teach that in Holocaust education in public spheres because you'll get the anti-Israel crowd saying that's Zionism is racism and etc. We're happy to talk about dead Jews, you know, but not Jews who defend themselves. So, and then there are Jews need to toughen up a bit too, you know. Anyway, there's a set of 10 recommendations, but I think the first thing is, what we've done is created a network across the country. We have 12 teams who actively challenge their failed Jewish leaders. In New York the other day, the JCRC was having a gala event celebrating an official from CUNY, which just had this applause for this anti-Semite. And we brought a truck there, an ad truck, that said, why are you doing this, JCRC? You're failing us. Why don't you attack CUNY? Why don't you demand that CUNY get rid of that law school dean who applauded? And then there were people in the safe SAF and Safe CUNY group who were handing out leaflets. So that's what we want to do. We want to disrupt this soporific, sweeping leadership that is just driving us into very bad places.
Charles Jacobs and Avi Goldwasser's book is called Betrayal, The Failure of American Jewish Leadership. Where can people go to find out more about the book, find out more about you guys?
Well, they can buy the book on Amazon or any other place, because some people don't like Amazon. I kind of agree, but the easiest thing is Amazon. then they can go to jewishleadershipproject.org, and they can sign up and they can reach out to us if they want. If they want to be activists, we need that. And of course, they can make a tax deductible donation, which helps with our staff and our trunks and our PR and our book.
Charles, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rabbi.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guests will be Rabbi Alexander Seinfeld and Dr. Daniel Grove, authors of Body and Soul, The Torah Path to Health, Fitness, and a Holy Life, a fascinating look at how Orthodox Judaism can move towards a greater focus on promoting physical health. And please, join us at Congregation Beit Simcha each Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading, and Kiddush, live in person and available on our Facebook page. Our playout this morning is from my new favorite Israeli band, Hatikva 6. They're not that new, but they're kind of newish to me. Their song, Hakol Od Lefanai, Everything is Still Before Me. The lyrics include, the suspense between possibility and certainty never leaves me. Suspended between bud and flower, I want to be because there I am radiant, and there everything can still happen. Hope it's all good. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace. Thank you.
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.